I am sitting here with retired Congressperson John Hall from the who represented District 19 when District 19 was not quite in our WGXC listening area, a little south of here, but now District 19 does encompass the WGXC listening area.
And my home, too.
And your home, too. You're where are you now, in Dutchess County?
Dutchess County in Dover Plains, a little town over near the Connecticut border.
And you're coming up to Hudson this Friday, June 16th, for a benefit concert for Triform Village.
Right. Triform Camp Hill and school. It's a wonderful organization that does great things for kids who are challenged in different ways and don't aren't able to function through the regular school system. And I'm looking forward to this so much because they have a bell choir that is quite amazing, and we're going to do a couple songs together, the kids. And
yeah, I should say, I said you were going to perform, and I said you were a congressperson, but you're also a...
Well, I'm a lifelong musician, recording artist. I started the band Orleans in my basement 45 years ago in Saugerties, and was part of the Woodstock, you know, scene, music scene there.
I remember you wrote going the No Nukes Power song?
I wrote Power and was one of the organizers, along with Jackson Brown, Bonnie Raitt, and Graham Nash. One of the board members of Muse, Musicians United for Safe Energy, which organized the No Nukes concerts back in 1979, back when the New York State Power Authority was trying to put a nuclear power plant on the Hudson and cement in Greene County. So, I was involved in environmental stuff and community stuff, and I was
in Ulster County.
Benefits
you,
going.
You worked against the was it a power plant in Ulster County?
There was a giant dump and incinerator that was supposed to go in the Winston Farm and Saugerties.
Similar to the cement town and the similar to
the cement and nuke that I and other people involved with the Mid-Hudson Nuclear Opponents did. Orleans did a show with Bonnie Raitt at the Bart Avant Theater in Poughkeepsie to raise money to try to hire legal experts and to organize.
They wanted to put a nuclear power plant on the Hudson River in the 70s?
The Power Authority had a site. They had bought the land. They spent $150 million of ratepayers' money without getting a single permit. They had contracted with Babcock and Wilcox for the same exact design as the reactor that partially melted down at Three Mile Island in Pennsylvania. And
That year.
Yeah. So it was... the cement in Greene County nuke was doomed from the moment TMI, started to go haywire, that and people realized it was the same design.
I don't think they put a nuclear plant in production for a number of years after Three Mile Island, probably, right?
Yeah, it was about 30 years of no new nuclear plants coming on design or coming into a pipeline. But... anyway, so this was a long process for me, and I got involved in Saugerties, where my wife and daughter and I lived at the time. My ex-wife, who still lives there, and my daughter and I, with stopping illegal junkyards from proliferating in town, or that one was triggered by my next-door neighbor crushing 100 junk cars on his lawn one Sunday morning. With the crusher machine and a flatbed truck and a forklift, and he's flipping these carcasses up on the flatbed truck to take them away to some other, metal recycling place or something. But it was enough. I think most people get involved in politics when their ox gets gored, as they say. And my ox got gored by that. And then also I used to drive my daughter to school past the Winston Farm, where this mega dumped 200,000 tons of garbage for 20 years, each year for 20 years. And in the Environmental Impact Statement, they also had a pair of incinerators with 300-foot high smokestacks where the dioxin would be coming out of all the plastic and other stuff that would be getting burned. And I just went, it's either me or it. I don't want to move. And I want to have this for a neighbor. And so gradually, and then I got into local, county politics after the landfill and incinerators were beaten.
This is in Ulster County at the time?
In Ulster County, in town of Saugerties. I was asked to run for county legislature. And first time I said, no, I got a career, I got a family, you know, I've got work to do. And it turned out that the incumbent who had voted for this sighting of the dump in our hometown was going to win in a walk because nobody would run against him. And so I said, well, no, can't let that happen, you know. So I got talked into running, which I think, you know, more people should run for office, local office, county office, school board, which I also did 1.5 terms on the school board. I was president of the Board of Education in Saugerties for a couple of years. And, you know, that's the purest form of democracy to me, because you run not as a member of a party, but as an individual. And you have to, you do have to run for office, but it's a thankless job that nobody wants. So no matter what decision you make, you know, there are people on both sides that'll be mad at you for what it is. And you get no pay and you get no benefits. And for that, you get to leave your family at the dinner table and dash off with a couple of bites of dinner and then take off for the administration building to have the board meetings at night, because that's, everybody has a job during the day pretty much, except for me, the musician, whose jobs are usually at night. But the meetings are at night, so you wind up being out till 11 or 12 or sometimes later at the board meeting. And but it gives you the feeling that at the most basic bottom level our democracy functions. You know, and I would have alliances on one issue that involved agreeing with certain people. On another issue, I'd be agreeing with a different group of people. And because it wasn't party line, it was always, you know.
It was issue based.
It was issue based.
You had to make a decision based on what
I believed and what I thought was best for the school district.
What we see now is basically just people going along with whatever.
Too often that's what's happening. But there are some people in D.C., I think, in both sides of the political aisle. Certainly, I was a Democratic congressman and county legislator, and certainly on our side of the aisle, people who disagreed with leadership or people who, when I was in D.C., Ron Paul would vote against everything, including what his own leadership was for. Frequently, and also Dennis Kucinich from Cleveland on the Democratic side would always be voting against everything. And it was always on some principle, like, you know, we'd be naming a post office or congratulating the New York Giants on winning the Super Bowl or something, you know, or whoever won that year. And those two guys would vote no on principle, that we shouldn't be wasting the taxpayers' money by spending, you know, 5 minutes taking a vote on whether to congratulate this football team or, you know, was to rename this post office after some famous or some, you know, community hero or veteran or, you know, it was just beneath them and they thought it should be beneath Congress. So, you know, but nowadays it seems like it's so many people are afraid of being primaried, you know, on either the, especially on the Republican side now, I think. Somewhat
both cases,
on the Democratic side, but
a teach out, you could say, was teach out Yandic. We elected the candidate that couldn't win in the general. Right. That's what you're talking about, being afraid of primaried from the right. So the candidate is so far right they can't win in the primary.
And the same thing happens on the Democratic side. So it tends to produce candidates that are more to the extremes so they can get through the primary. And then when they get to D.C., it tends to produce candidates who vote with their leadership and with the party line. So that's not necessarily good. There are a lot of potential solutions for this, but one of them is more people running, getting off the couch.
Are more people talking to you about running when you talk?
Well, I've been talked to about running again. I spent 10 years in elected office, counting the school board, county legislature, and 4 years in the House of Representatives. So I think that's enough of my life, of any person's life. 10 years, you ought to be able to say, well, it's somebody else's turn at that point.
Do people come to you for advice now about
running?
People
come for me to advice. People still ask me to run, but I have family reasons and health reasons that I'm not. But I'm certainly engaged and, you know, aware of what's going on. I follow it closely. It's hard not to. I wrote a memoir that came out last August called Still the One, A Rock and Roll Journey to Congress and Back. And it's about my becoming a musician first, you know, growing up in a musical family and a scientific family, and a very devout Catholic family, for what that's worth, and how, you know, my older brother, my father was a scientist, electrical engineer, designed the first camera that took live pictures from the moon when Neil Armstrong walked on the moon for the first time, and he wanted his sons, me and my two brothers, to be scientists. My mom had a master's in divinity and wanted all of her sons to be priests. And my older brother was an actuary, which was a mathematician, you know, a probability specialist. And my younger brother was a Jesuit priest. And I fell somewhere in the middle. I'm the black sheep.
Came out of that, huh?
Well, you know, but I wrote songs that if you look at a sheet music, it's a graph of time versus pitch. And you're dealing with intervals like fifth harmonies and third harmonies, and you're dealing with 64th notes and whole notes and half notes. And it's one of the reasons why people say kids who are 4 or 5 years, studies show that kids at 5 years of age, kindergarten age basically, if they get piano lessons at that age, they do a 30% better score in SATs 11 years later. Now, this country, or, you know, not the Asian countries, there they have a long view of everything, but in this country, we have a short view, a short attention span, and nobody can look past the next election or, you know, the next budget. If it's a school district, you're like hoping you can pass a budget this year. So it's hard to sell something that'll produce results 11 years later. And I tried, and Socrates and somebody, you know, to have this piano for every piano lessons for every kindergartner, and somebody out of sympathy seconded my motion, and then it was an 8-1 vote against, with me being the only musician and the only person voting. Well, I was president of the board at the time, but I was the only person voting yes on this. But there were two studies that I had at the time, one from Psychology Today and one that was funded by the National Association of Musical Instrument Manufacturers, which, of course, everybody would suspect. You know, they would slant that study to show that music's important. But it's true that music and art are important for the kids' self-esteem and for their understanding of the world and for their self-expression. And there are a lot of reasons, including the fact that music involves mathematics. And that's one of the things that shoots up later in their test scores, you know, if they have music lessons when they're young.
Our local representative, John Faso, has claimed recently that there are paid protesters calling him. His office. Did you have paid protesters calling your
office?
I don't believe that.
You
don't
First
believe
of all,
it now.
No, I don't think he's telling the truth, or he knows the truth, one or the other. But
he is getting.
I know there are paid trolls online.
Online, yes.
And I know there are
some of them from Russia.
Some of them from Russia, and some of them
from here,
know, from different interest groups or political parties here. When I was in office, we had repeat callers or repeat emailers, or I mean, and we also had organized petitions.
Yeah, the 2010 election year must have been very similar to what John Faso is going through now.
Not
right?
Really.
The Tea Party wasn't showing up at your town halls?
The main similarity is that my 2010 election was the first one after the Citizens United Supreme Court decision, which allowed billionaires, millionaires, corporations, so-called super PACs or public interest groups that are not really nonprofit, you know, that they are allowed to spend money on elections, even foreign-owned corporations, to spend unlimited millions of dollars in our elections. And I can't believe that that's what the founding, you know, fathers or even a reasonable person today would think is, you know, the idea of a democracy or one person, one vote, you know, that, you know, if you have, when the Fairness Doctrine went out, I think it was during the Reagan years, you know, that was something I'm sure you're aware of as a broadcaster, that that required equal time to be given to somebody with the opposite point of view if somebody was advertising or going on free on the radio or TV and espousing a particular point of view, that the broadcast has had to provide time for somebody else to present the opposite point of view. Well, not only is that no longer the case, but now anybody who has the millions of dollars to do it can spend money on advertising for or against any candidate without disclosing where the money came from or who they spent on it until after the fact. And that can be a corporation that's majority owned by people from overseas. So you can have a Russian-owned corporation or a Saudi-owned corporation or a Chinese-owned corporation spending unlimited money to affect our elections. That started happening in my last election, 2010. That was the first election. It happened to be Tea Party also. But I think that Citizens United had more of an effect on it than the Tea Party did.
And there's no way to get rid of Citizens United unless Congress passes?
Yeah, there's one way. Congress has to pass a law that challenges, that will go up through the court. It'll be challenged in court, and it'll rise, you know, to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court has to be balanced in such a way that it would seriously consider overturning its own decision, Citizens United, which is probably not going to happen with this 5-4 split that you have in the court.
So you're talking
today.
10 to 20 years before it's even possible to overturn it.
Because unfortunately,
the Congress would have to line up in just the right way, and the court would have to line up in just the right way.
Right. It's very difficult to see, unless there's a constitutional convention, and an amendment to the Constitution, which I don't think is going to happen. And it's probably better that it doesn't happen. I'm afraid about either a state or a federal constitutional convention being hijacked for all kinds of things. But
yeah,
it'd
actually be a good idea, but I'm afraid, I would be afraid too.
Once you open that
can of worms, what in this era might get put into the Constitution.
Or taken out.
Right, yes.
Yeah, well, I hate to be depressing. Man, we actually had a piece of positive, fun, lilting, soothing music lined up from a record of mine called Rock Me on the Water. It was the title track, is the Jackson Browne song. But this song is one that Steve Warner and I wrote together. It's called Another Sunset. And I do a duet on this album of mine with Steve. And he plays Chet Atkins, one of my earliest guitar heroes, Chet Atkins' gut string guitar on it. After Chet Atkins died, his wife gave Steve Warner Chet's guitar collection, and this guitar was one of them. So I just thought today would be a good day not to play something that was a statement and, you know, a strident song about some of environmental or political thing, which I've been known to do. But this is a wonderful piece of music, and Steve plays great guitar and sings great on it, and it's called Another Sunset With You.
All right, let's hear Another Sunset. All right, that was Another Sunset from John Hall from his Rock Me on the Water CD, and John's going to be performing Friday, June 16th at Triforum Village in Hudson.
Correct.
And you're going to be, you want to tell us about the performance at all? Why should people come out?
Well, sure. I mean, first of all, it's a really good cause. Secondly, I think I'm a pretty good guitar player and singer and songwriter, and I've been performing solo as well as with Orleans since getting out of Congress, going back to normal life, which to me is being a musician. And, also, I'll be joined by special guest Laurel Messay, original member of Manhattan Transfer, who lives not far from here. And she's going to sing with me. And also the bell choir from Triforum School will be performing, singing and playing the bells. And I did a show not long ago with Orleans at the Perkins School for the Blind in Massachusetts, which is the school that Helen Keller went to, and their choir, you know, it's a different disability that they deal with at that school, but their choir sang with Orleans and, you know, learned a couple of our songs and came out and sang really great harmony on them, and it was a thrill for the kids and also for us to see the effect that it had on them and their parents and all the people who attended and supported that benefit. So this is another benefit of the same kind of importance and humanitarian and educational. For everybody, I think it's an educational experience.
And I guess, I'm guessing you'll probably be doing Still the One Friday night.
Probably.
I'm also guessing, I'm wondering how soon you think it will be before Donald Trump uses that song at a campaign rally. Yeah.
Well, you know, he probably won't. I don't know. But
but you've had that happen before.
Well, George W. Bush used it without permission. And
what you have to...
We sent a cease and desist order. The band Orleans, I as songwriter, along with my co-writer, and the publishing company, EMI Music Publishing, which used to be Thorn, EMI, a multinational from England. Now they're owned by Sony ATV. So it's like the Beatles record company, ATV, and Sony, which has all of the... You know, they bought EMI now, so it's this huge conglomerate. But they sent a cease and desist letter. And Warner Brothers, which owns Asylum Records, which was our original record company that Still the One was on, sent a cease and desist letter. There are actually four copyrights involved. The performance, which the band owns, the record companies owns, you know, part of that performance copyright because they signed us to the label way back when, the music publishing company, and the two songwriters involved. So there are four different copyrights.
So what are the legal... Are you allowed to use a song at a campaign rally?
You're not allowed to use it without a license. You can use... I mean, if it's a part... What they claimed as their excuse was that it was background music and that they had gotten a blanket license from BMI, the Broadcast Music Incorporated, the way a restaurant would get or the way a nightclub would get to use ASCAP or BMI licensed songs over the course of a year. You pay some small amount of money, and that way you could... In your store or whatever, you could have background music playing, and it would help to create the ambiance that you want for your, you know, lunch customers or your
and the
shoppers.
Artists still get something for their work,
and all the art it gets prorated out by a computerized system that's actually, I think, pretty accurate. And, but if you're going to use something that's featured as your quote campaign theme song, that's not background music, and you just as an advertiser, as you know, if you're advertising. A product like, you know, well, Still the One has been used. You know, at one point it was being used by Burger King and Nutrisystem at the same time. So you could gain weight and lose weight both at the same time with Still the One. But
so it comes down to the advertisement versus background music. If it's right. Part of your branding, then it's...
Right. And this was, you know, George W. with his V for Victory hands held up above his head and the confetti coming down and Still the One, our version or our original version, blaring out of the speakers in Columbus, Ohio, at a rally for his campaign, and none of the people who were involved with that piece of intellectual property had been asked their permission or for a license. So, you know, he shouldn't have been surprised. The same thing's been happening with, you know, Ronald Reagan wanted to use Born in the USA and Springsteen having to inform him because they didn't read the lyrics.
First, he had to tell him that it's actually not what you think it's about.
It's an anti-war song, yeah. But... yeah, that seems to happen. Tom Petty with "Don't Won't Back Down" with McCain, I think it was. It tends to happen, and it tends to be Republicans, unfortunately. That there's actually a display in D.C. right now. I mean, an exhibit at the museum, which is right next to the Smithsonian Museum. It started at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame last year, and there's a video collage in there, part of the exhibit that includes an interview with me on Stephen Colbert, back when it was the Colbert Report right. On Comedy Central.
You famously went on
you're saying,
right
aren't
before
you
the
happy
election?
that President Bush is using your song? And I went, I was really tired, and that was a good thing because I wasn't trying to be the funny guy. And I understand that that's the word on Stephen is that you do better with him if you let him be funny and you be the straight person.
The Stephen Colbert with the quotes right. Around his name. Yeah.
Well, I would guess it's probably similar. But the funniest person, at any rate, should be him. But
so one last question. You went through the Tea Party rallies and such in 2010, you still had town hall meetings.
Right.
Our current representative, John Faso, won't have a town hall meeting And I guess he's saying it's because all the protesters will be so mean to him. What would your advice or why? Or what?
My advice to him would be to allow access to him from his constituents. I did that in the five counties I represented when it was the 19th, then the 19th included southern half of Dutchess County, almost all of Orange County, all of Putnam County, northern half of Westchester, and a little bit of northern Rockland counties in the Hudson Valley. So it was, at that time, this was the 20th up here, which my former classmate, Kirsten Gillibrand, now Senator Gillibrand, represented in the House of Representatives, and then Scott Murphy for a term after that, when she was appointed to the empty Senate seat that Secretary of State Clinton had held before she was appointed to be Secretary of State. I think it's important. Look, we had protesters at our rallies. We had threatening phone calls to my home. My wife, when I was in D.C., got threatening phone calls at home. I had staffers with me, and I had town police or state police that were available if I wanted them, if I needed them. Sometimes they would. When I was holding town hall meetings about the Affordable Care Act and taking questions, honestly, answering the best I could, questions from the pro and con sides on that issue, you know, and that vote, I didn't back down. You know, I stood out there and I remember in the town of Warwick and the town of Goshen and the town of Beacon and various places where I had partially hostile crowds at my town hall meetings and candidates that were going to run against me, who had said they were going to run against me, coming in trying to take over the meetings, you know, and without my even asking, town police showed up. And so if I had needed them, which I didn't, I could have asked them to control the crowd, you know, but, you know, it's ridiculous. I mean, what about the Capitol Police who took bullets yesterday to protect the Republican baseball players and the congressional baseball team? You know, don't ask them to protect you and not be willing to go out in public as congressman or congresswoman member, to be politically correct. And don't ask, you know, these people. I mean, when I was leaving Congress, there were these guys that I saw every day that I walked past going from the Longworth building where my office was across to the Capitol to vote. And I held my hand out and said, I want to thank you for protecting us. And they said, Congressman, you're very welcome, but we can't shake your hand. And I said, you're kidding. And they said, we're not allowed to touch anybody's hand because it could be the beginning of a martial arts move, including tourists, protesters, congressmen, staffers. They're not allowed to shake hands. And the reason was that several years before that, before I was in Congress, a crazed guy with a gun came in, shot his way through the checkpoints and got inside the Capitol before he was shot by there were two Capitol policemen killed. And while I was there, they had a memorial for them in the Capitol rotunda. And I got to appreciate what these guys and gals do who are there, you know, to protect us public servants. And that's what it is, whether you received a salary for it or not, or whether, you know, people think you're there for the right reason. I, you know, was a citizen. I like to think of myself as a citizen congressman. I didn't go into it to have a career. I went into it because I thought some things needed to change, and I served two terms. And then electorate decided, my constituents decided they wanted somebody else, and they elected a Republican in that district for one term, and then they elected Sean Patrick Maloney, who's still there now in his third term.
We think of him as our representative somewhat too. He's held the town hall in this district.
I was aware of that, you know. But I think that, you know, John Faso's a big boy. You know, I mean, he was minority leader in the assembly, as I recall, here in New York State. And he knows what it's like to be in the majority and in the minority. And he's been a lobbyist, so he certainly is familiar with what members of different elected bodies go through. I think there was ways for him to do it if he wanted to do it.
Was there effective ways for Republicans to reach you when you were a Democrat in the
district? My staff made appointments with me in my offices. At the time, I had offices in Orange County and in Putnam County, and both sides of the river, so it was easier for people to get to. And I had office hours in D.C. in my office in the Longworth Building. And anybody could call and make an appointment. I had appointments not just with individuals, but with members of organizations, but with supervisors, town supervisors or mayors of cities or county executives. I had offices in the county office building in both Orange County and in Putnam County, and I was familiar with it on a first-name basis and shook hands with and talked a lot with the county executives, who at that time were both Republicans in both counties, and there was no big deal about it. In fact, I tried to help anybody.
What about if Democrats now want Faso to vote against the new Republican health? He already voted for it, but if he has
one more vote to take on.
So he's going to take another vote. So what advice would you give if you want to, is it emailing him, faxing him, calling him, showing up, protesting outside? What's the most effective way?
I think a handwritten note or a personal phone call, which will be taken by a staff member, but they do keep score about how many people are calling on either side, would be probably the most effective thing. The least effective thing would be one of these online petitions where you sign up with however many other people and it gets handed in by a third party. Members of Congress, at least when I was there, tend to discount those, because it's the least effort. In other words, the person who is least invested and cares the least about it, that's the easiest thing for them to do. Whereas time out of your day to make a phone call or to sit down and write an actual letter and send it to their office, that's sort of more of a commitment of time, shows more involvement with the issue.
Now some of the people have been calling Faso's office so much they're getting tired, or they feel like the staff is just hearing the same thing over and over again, so they're dismissing it. Is it
get your mother to call, or your brother or sister, or your friend to call? Of course, the same person. If I were to call, I called John Fasto's office about the health care bill. I actually called about the main reason I called was to ask him. It's a question I asked Hillary Clinton when she was thinking, the first time around about running when she ran the primary against Barack Obama and lost. I said to her, because I know her, and I know Bernie Sanders, I worked with both of them. When I was in D.C. and in Congress, I met a lot of people that I never thought I would meet, and I got to see things and go places I never thought I would go. But I said to Hillary, I hope if you become president, you will still work for and believe in the balance of powers, equal, balanced, co-equal branches of government. Can you look me in the eye and tell me you'll do that? And she did. She looked me in the eye and said, yes, I will. We never got to find out what she would have done. But there's been a transfer of power going back to the Korean War, which was not a declared war, it was a permission slip, and then the War Powers Act after that covered every war, and there's quite a few that we've been involved in, including this ongoing war against the radical terrorists, the Taliban or ISIS or what have you.
Whatever, in Iraq
and in Syria and in Afghanistan for 15 years now. And never even a vote on a declaration of war. And that is Congress ceding its constitutional power to the executive branch. And I think it's wrong. And I said back then when I was in Congress, when I ran for Congress, I said that I would demand a vote on any entry into any new war. And I think that's what, I called John Fasto's office. I had to pick one issue to talk about because I don't know how many times I didn't talk to him personally. I've never met John Fasto, and I respect him for serving because I know it's hard. It's a real job, and regardless of which side of the aisle you're on, it's a 13. If you do it conscientiously, it's a 13-hour a day, 7 a day a week job. Uh, some people block out, you know, Sunday or Saturday if they're Jewish, you know, like Chuck Schumer does. But still, it's a real serious, hard job. So I called his office and I spoke to whatever staffer I got, forget his name. And I said, this is former Congressman John Hall, who represented the old 19th. And I just want to leave a message, please, you know, for Congressman Faso. And he said, sure, absolutely, I'll take down a message for him. And I said, I want to ask him to please not cede any more congressional authority to the executive branch, and to vote and to advocate for constitutional balance of powers as it's described in the Constitution, you know, not as it's become over the last 50 years. And especially in the last, I'd say, you know, well, really since 9/11, it's become, you know, the unitary presidency executive, as they, you know, it's been talked about. And I think it's bad for the country. And I think it's very tempting for any president, especially somebody who's used to being a chief executive of a private corporation or a bunch of corporations, to think that he can just run things. And I think for, you know, President George W. Bush, who was, you know, owner of the Texas Rangers, among other things, before he was elected president, and governor of Texas, you know, but, you know, I think it must be very tempting to think that you can accrue more power to the executive branch. And it's not a good idea for any of us, including the president, for that to happen. Anyway, that's my version of my message that I left for John Faso.
All right. Well, John Hall, thank you so much for talking to us today. And
we'll talk more about music sometime.
And we'll hear some of your music Friday night at Triform in Hudson.
Right. Me and hopefully Laurel Massé, and I'm definitely the bell choir, and I'll be there with bells on.
All right. Thank you so much for talking to us today.